Hello, welcome back. This is Bill Quinn. This week, I'll be interviewing the executive director of Mission Restore, Karina Nagin. We met at a local Brooklyn cafe, talked a little bit about the organization and what they do, which is to fly surgeons from the United States to developing countries like Tanzania and Myanmar and help develop the doctors and the surgeons in those countries. We'll also talk about the ways they use this technology to keep the relationships and the mentorships going after the doctors return, some of the events they have coming up, like the Fall Soiree, and how you can support some of the more talented doctors that they meet as they travel to these different countries. And with that, here is my interview with Karina. So tell me a little bit about Mission Restore and how you got involved with Mission Restore.
So Mission Restore was founded by a surgeon here in New York City who had been working on issues of global surgery for the past 20 years. And Mission Restore is really born out of what he saw as a missing link in what other organizations were offering. So for 20 years, he had been doing what I would call traditional surgical missions. So these were these short-term trips where doctors or surgeons will fly over to a hospital in a developing country, spend 1 or 2 weeks operating on as many people as they can, and then they come home. And so it's fabulous for the people that they're able to treat while they're there. The unfortunate part is once they leave, there's really no local capacity for the doctors on the ground to continue addressing the needs in their communities. So Mission Restore was really born out of his desire to build local capacity. So he's wondering how we can train surgeons to really work in their own communities. So that started about 5 years ago, when he created Mission Restore.
And you go to the, you've been to some of these places.
Yeah.
What are some of the more memorable doctors you've met and patients and experiences that you've had when you, or where have you gone?
So Mission Restore has done work in several different countries. Right now we have two long-term partnerships because we're really shifting to focus on long-term partnerships with hospitals on the ground. So right now we're partnered with hospitals in Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, in Tanzania. So Tanzania was the very first trip I did with Mission Restore a year ago. It was the first time that I got to see our surgeons and our partner surgeons in action, which was incredible. I think for me personally, coming from a background of international development that's focused much more on long-term projects, long-term economic empowerment or economic development, it takes a long time to see the results of your labor. Surgery is one of these wonderful things where you see immediate results.
Right.
So, you would go into a hospital and you see someone who is broken, literally has been in a car accident, has a severe trauma. They're able to go into the operating room and these surgeons are able to put them back together. And the next day you're able to see this child sort of running around the grounds, which is incredible. So I can give one, I think this is sort of always how it is, but one of the very first cases I saw when I went to Tanzania was the one that really stuck with me. So there was a young girl who had been at this hospital for about 2 weeks. Her parents brought her in. She had broken her arm. So this is the type of injury that sort of any parent with a small child knows. It's a fractured arm. She fell while playing. It should be a pretty simple fix. You set the bone, you put a cast on it. What happened is that the doctors at the local hospital set it improperly. So as a result, they put the cast on, but the arm became infected. So when we were in Tanzania on this first trip, our surgeon educators saw this young girl. She was 7 years old, and she was sitting in a bed, sort of being neglected because no one knew what to do with her. And her arm had actually...
So the surgeons there didn't know how to treat an infection.
Yeah, they didn't know how to treat this infection. They weren't sure why it was becoming infected. And so, unfortunately, the result is when you don't have the skill set, they kind of ignore it. So you see a lot of these patients lining the halls of a lot of the hospitals where we work. So she had been sitting there for multiple weeks. The arm had gotten more and more infected. Result being is that gangrene set in. So it was a really bad infection. And by the time we saw her, our surgeon saw her, she was unconscious. She was really near death. It was very extreme. So they rushed her into the emergency room, and then working with the local doctors, they were able to save her life. Unfortunately, what they had to do was amputate her arm in order to save her life. So I think this case really highlights the two things that we're really focused on. One is the importance of surgery to save lives. It can, if you have access to surgery, it can save someone's life immediately. Like the next day, she was conscious, she was laughing, she was a healthy child.
Right.
the issue was that the local surgeons didn't have the skill set to be able to address the easy problem early on.
Right.
So that's what we're trying to do, is really train. And through this case, now luckily the surgeons there are able to treat. If they see another case like hers, they'll be able to treat it properly the first time. But if it can be treated early on, you can really avoid a lot of these lifetime disabilities that you see.
So it brings up the question, I think, what is a surgery training like for a doctor in Myanmar? How poor is the training with before you show up?
Yeah, so there's a couple different issues. All of the doctors that we're working with have already gone through medical school. So they're trained doctors. Many of them have been even trained as general surgeons. So they have basic training. Here in the U.S., we have a residency program. So anyone who watches Grey's Anatomy or any of the ER,
you see, that's where I learned.
Yeah, right. So that's usually a good reference point. But you see medical students go through their training, and then you're placed in a hospital and you go through a residency program. So you have a supervisor who's able to train you, and that's really where you get the hands-on training. So that's where you get the actual skill set. It's not the book. The issue in a lot of places where we work is that's what's missing. They don't have the sort of residency program where you can have supervisors who are able to help guide you through that training. So an issue like in Tanzania where we work, it has the lowest doctor-patient ratio in the world. So there's one doctor, one who has gone through medical school for every 50,000 patients. And then when you get to start looking at surgery, the numbers get even worse. So we work a lot in reconstructive surgery. There are only two reconstructive surgeons for the entire country. And reconstructive surgeons are really the ones who put you back together. So if you've been in a car accident, if you have a broken arm, a traumatic wound we see a lot of burns, because a lot of women and children
These are like emergency room.
Exactly.
Doctors,
yeah, exactly.
Surgeons.
So they just don't have any of that sort of advanced training. So what we're doing is we're not supplementing a medical school education, but we're providing those really hands-on skills to address sort of the simple challenges that they're facing on a daily basis, because these doctors are just seeing hundreds and hundreds of patients a year. So we provide that sort of mentoring, the skills and the judgment that they need to better treat these patients. So we actually do it a couple ways. One is through these hands-on trainings where the doctors are there in person and they're in the ORs. So the doctors are working together. And what we always say is that we're really working with the local surgeons and not for them. So it's not about us coming in and doing the operations that they're unable to do. It's about assisting them so that they can gain the skills so that they can continue to do them. So we do a lot of hands-on training, but then to supplement that, because we can't be there all the time, is we do a lot of telemedicine, so video conferencing, where we're able to continue to mentor surgeons, follow up on patients, and really just create a network so they have sort of peers to be able to talk to and talk through cases.
Right. So tell me a little bit more about telemedicine? Telemedicine.
Yeah, so part of our programs, as I was saying, is after we're there in person, is that we do a lot of follow-up through telemedicine. And so really what that means is it's video conferencing. So Skype, picture Skype is sort of what people know. And it's incredible to me how easily you can connect two surgeons from halfway around the world, and they speak the same language of surgery, how directly they communicate with each other. And for those,
are you able to follow all their conversation?
I catch the beginning and the end, basically. But for those of you who haven't worked with surgeons, one of the things I love about them is how direct and action-oriented they are. They just want to get things done. And so they speak very precisely. It's very action-oriented. Those of us in the development nonprofit field can get a little bit jargony and obtuse, but surgeons are very direct. So it's amazing how much they can communicate. So just as an example, a couple of weeks ago, I was up early and we had a Skype call with one of our partner surgeons in Tanzania and one of our surgeon trainers here in Manhattan, in New York City. And through Skype, they were able to connect. It was a video connection. And there were three patients that they had questions about. So they were able to actually show the patients on the video, had questions about sort of their operating plan. And one case was a young man, he was probably about 20 years old. He had had, I think it was a work-related accident that had really damaged his arm. And in about 10 minutes, they were able to talk through what the surgical plan was so that he could keep his arm. And this all happened in sort of a 20-minute call. And it was as simple as, okay, we're going to cut here. No. It's better if you cut here. He'll have more mobility.
Right.
And it happened so quickly. I got off the call And, you know, I had to talk to the surgeon here in the New York afterwards and be like, did that just happen? Like, is this 20-year-old man for the rest of his life going to be able to, you know, not have a severe disability that's going to keep him from working? He's like, because this operation is going to be done slightly differently, he's going to be able to keep this functionality. He said, yes. He's like, it wasn't, the surgeons, you know, we could tell them exactly just different plan of attack, and they were able to adapt to that. So this telemedicine, I think, just has a huge potential. And again, it's sort of creating this network, connecting surgeons. They're able to talk to each other. They want to talk to colleagues. They can transfer an amazing amount of knowledge just through an internet connection.
Are there any memorable doctors, any doctors that you can kind of stick out in your mind as someone like, oh, that doctor came a long way, or was just, you know, was just doing an amazing job with the little that they have? Or?
Yeah. So one of my favorite surgeons is in Tanzania. His name's Dr. Paul Atule, to give him a shout out. And he's a young surgeon. He's in his sort of, I don't know his exact age, late 20s. And he is incredibly smart, incredibly passionate. And you could feel just his like deep sense of service to his community. Every time we talked to him about why he became a surgeon, you know, he could be working in a lot of different places, making a lot more money than he does in a district hospital. He works in a government-run hospital. And he's just faced with enormous challenges. And I think when I first met him, you could feel the frustration of wanting to do more, but just not really having all the skills that he needed to do more. And I'm not going to go into the details of the actual procedure because, one, it's boring, and two, I'm not a doctor.
And you probably make me pass out. I can't take gross stories
or anything. This is the challenge when talking about surgery. You can never really show the detailed photos or the detailed stories. No one really wants to go there. But on one of our first visits, he was working with Dr. Elizadeh, our founder, and they had a case, and it was an issue of needing to remove pressure, so really to drain blood away from a site that they were working on. And they didn't have the capacity to do that. And so they were able to actually create a workaround with the local materials that were in the hospital to be able to address the need that this patient had. And they'd never done this before. 2 months later, a very similar case came in, and he was able to replicate that same solution and actually have a positive outcome with the patient. What I like to say is that we're creating a network of surgeons. So it's not just, you know, it's not just training as in sitting in a classroom, but it's having colleagues that you can talk to. So any of us, no matter what field you're in, you have friends and colleagues that you can turn to. And when you're having a bad day, or you have a question or a sort of a challenge in your work, you turn to them and you say, hey, can you help me think through this?
Right.
With surgery, there's so few surgeons, and in the countries where we work, they're just faced with this overwhelming need. They don't really have that outlet to be able to talk to colleagues. So just being able to help connect them, you know, they're smart, very capable doctors, but they just need that little extra support to do their job as well as they want to do it. So that's what we're trying to help them build.
Right. So you mentioned earlier that you have two upcoming trips. What are your future projects?
So we have a couple of exciting, a lot. It's been a really busy year. So in Tanzania, where we've had some really great successes with our early pilots, we're going to be going back this November. So we have two fantastic surgeons, one here from New York and one from University of Colorado, who are going to be going out and visiting our partners in northern Tanzania. We're also doing another trip in December. We're going to be expanding our work in Tanzania, and we've been invited to a new hospital in Zanzibar. So we're going to be visiting new partners there, which is very exciting. And then we've also just started working with a great organization in Burundi called Village Health Works, which is a community-based health center. And they're just in the early stages of building a hospital in a very rural area, and it'll have their very first operating room capability. So we're partnering with them to help them think through how we can build surgical capacity in Burundi. So that'll be probably early 2016 when we'll start working on that project. So a lot is coming up.
Right. All right, good. That's a good sign, right?
Yeah, it's great. It's exciting.
Do you have any upcoming events here in the city?
Yeah, so we're a small organization, but small but mighty, I like to say. So we have a fantastic advisory board and governing board, and then we have a really fantastic young professionals board. So this is a group of young professionals from all over New York City who work in a lot of different industries who want to help promote, support the work that Mission Restore does. And so they're organizing their annual fundraiser on November 13th. It's going to be at the Bowery Hotel. And it's a really fun, it's our fall soiree. So it's a really fun evening of music and dancing. We'll be hearing a lot of, seeing a lot of video and hearing updates from our partners in the field. We'll also have an opportunity, people will be sending messages directly to them as well. So it'll be a really fun evening. So if anyone's interested, tickets are on sale now. And there's one other activity that, just to make people aware if they want to get it involved, we've just launched our first educational grants. So when we see really promising surgeons who want to continue their education in a specialty, but sort of there's a financial barrier to them being able to do that, Mission Restore steps up to help support further their education. And one of the surgeons I spoke with, Dr. Paula Tule, was just accepted into the University of Nairobi's program for reconstructive surgery. And so we're providing him the educational grant needed so he can continue his training.
This is the same doctor you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay. Paul's amazing. So he just got an email from him a couple of days ago. He's really excited. It's a very difficult program to get into. They only accept a handful of doctors every year. And his passion is really to become a reconstructive surgeon because he deals with a lot of trauma. And so he knows that that's the skill set he needs. He's gotten into one of the best programs in the region. So we want to help support his tuition. So we're launching an Indiegogo campaign to help support his first year of tuition. It's only $2,500. So we're hoping that we can raise that in the next couple of months.
All right. When is the Indiegogo campaign launch?
It's launching at the fundraiser on November 13th.
Oh, all right. Great.
Doing it all at once.
Excellent. So my last question is, for someone who is interested in either the work that you're doing or the kind of organization that you have, which, what have you learned? Like, what is one piece of advice that you could pass on to someone who's in a similar situation or hoping to be in a similar situation?
Yeah. Ooh, words of wisdom.
Yes, yeah. This will paint the whole interview, whatever you say here, if it's good advice or not.
No pressure at all. I think whatever work that you're doing, it's first and foremost, you have to understand the local context and be working in partnership with the communities that you're looking to serve. So I think too often, sort of the first misstep that a lot of well-intentioned organizations make are thinking that they have the solution and that they can go into a community and bring them the solution. And that's not the case. Local communities, the surgeons we work with, they have the best knowledge and understanding of what the needs are. So it's really important, I think, early on in whatever work you're doing to have a strong relationship and partnerships with the organizations and the communities that you want to work with. So I think first and foremost, it's about communicating and having an equal partnership with them.
So do you do that? I mean, is that something that you have? Do you have a trip, kind of a pre-trip, or that where you go to a place and kind of do some of your research and bring it back, or do you talk to the people on the phone a lot? Like, how do you do that specifically?
Absolutely. So in-person visits, and then, you know, oftentimes we're invited because one hospital has heard of us, and you know, a surgeon talks to another surgeon, and they invite us to come to their hospital. But we always do an initial needs assessment to see if it is the right environment for us to work in. And so that means both: do they have the infrastructure that's needed, and then also is there buy-in from the leadership of the hospital? So do they want us there?
Right.
Which it seems silly, but it's sort of a critical question that a lot of people skip. Is this something that is needed and wanted by the administration? So once we do a needs assessment, if we see that our trainings and our programs can be helpful, and we see that the leadership of the hospital has buy-in and wants to be working with us and create that partnership, then we sign a 3-year partnership with the hospital so that they know that we're there for a minimum of 3 years. So it's not a one-off, it's not a short-term, one-time visit. And then we build on that. But it always starts with an initial conversation, an initial needs assessment, and then making sure that it's sort of mutually beneficial on both ends.
Well, this is great. I really, I think you guys do amazing work. This is really interesting to learn more about what you do.
Thank you.
And that's it. First off, a huge thank you to Karina Nagin for speaking with me and talking to me a little bit more about Mission Restore. And another huge thank you goes out to Babita Patel, who connected me to Mission Restore. This episode would have never happened if it hadn't been for her. So thank you to both of those people, and we'll see you next time. Well, if you enjoyed that, be sure to check out all the episodes on our website. For news on upcoming episodes, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And if you know an organization that would be a great fit for a future episode, contact me through the website or email thebillquinnpodcast@gmail.com.
But if we ever do have robots, I would love to come back and do a follow-up podcast.